Welcome to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like civics and government, the law, anthropology, and archaeology. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
We're joined in this program by Ethan Moses. Ethan is a maker, designer, and fabricator specializing in some of the oldest forms of chemical photography. He utilizes state-of-the-art digital fabrication techniques like 3D printing and laser cutting to create cameras based on old designs and expired patents. He is a regular contributor to online magazines and blogs about chemical photography, such as Emulsive, Film Shooters Collective, and 35mm Collective. He teaches chemical photography techniques online and at makerspaces. He is also a member of the board of directors of QLab, a makerspace in Albuquerque. His company, Cameradactyl, makes 3D printed film cameras and accessories for the general public. Ethan, we've talked in our previous segments about the fabrication and design of these old technologies as new objects in the 21st century for taking light and capturing it onto paper or film. You've been trolling Google patents for old patents that you can look at to develop the mechanisms for these kinds of things, and you've put a huge amount of personal time into developing STLs, which are 3D printable models for the parts. You know, there's a huge growth in the last 10 or 15 years in what's called the open source movement, where you make designs and code freely available to others. We were talking how you could send someone a design file for one of your cameras where they could print it at a library if they don't have their own 3D printer or at home for so much cheaper than it would cost you even to ship one of your cameras. But is there a path forward beyond being a tiny manufacturer? It used to be that you might hire an artisan to do what I would almost think of as small scale manufacturing, and you would pay that person a lot of money to build one thing or two things or three things. It was very custom or it had a very high quality. Now with these newer fabrication techniques, we have a thing where it's customizable, but it's not custom. And the technique itself is meant to be easy and, like you've talked about, not necessarily super high tolerance. So where's the path forward for an economic model that lets people that have all these clever ideas and make a living beyond, say, teaching, which is the first thing that came to mind?
It's a long way to ask a question that I spend a lot of time thinking about, and is maybe not the first obvious question of what do you think about when you want to make cameras. But if you want to make cameras 24/7, 365 days a year, you better think about this problem. Or if anybody who makes anything probably is thinking about this problem. And I think there are many paths forward. Some will surely lead to dead ends, maybe dependent upon how they're managed or maybe not. You know, the classic examples, I think, of people doing things like this. So when I grow up, I would love to be Simone Yetch. She's like a real inspiration to me. She's a YouTuber. She's pretty famous, like way more than me. But she was the queen of shitty robots, and she would make these YouTube videos.
Oh, I know her. She made the robot that hits her in the head, rubber hand that hits her in the head. She's brilliant.
She's super funny. And she actually just did a Wired article where she was sort of talking about not really wanting to do that anymore. But I think that her...
she's detonating herself.
To take herself more seriously. And she was talking about sort of being a younger woman that people don't necessarily take seriously. And a lot of her projects, or even the naming herself the Queen of Shitty Robots, is a little self-deprecating. And then stupid people will look at that and be like, yeah, she's dumb. But if you pay attention, she's one of the most brilliant people on the internet. And her model was to be funny and likable and do these projects. And really, like, it didn't matter if the projects worked or not. It was the video about the project that were always excellent. And I think then that has sort of branched out into her selling products like the Everyday Calendar. To me, at least, because for a long time now, she has put out excellent content and continues to do so, I think that's success. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the way for me. I used to say I wanted to be rich and not famous, and I used to be halfway there, and now I'm going on all these podcasts and ruining my advantage. I would just like to make cameras and have money fall from heaven.
it's called a grant.
Right, yeah, but then you're writing grants. Write some grants for Q Lab soon.
Yeah.
Right? Or you got to go on YouTube and sell YouTube ads around the entertainment video around the building of the project or the how-to video around building the project. However you slice it, you better be spending some time that's not building cameras, that's thinking about and doing those things that it takes, right? And so I've been running like a very traditional store up until this point where I just make a thing and ship it to somebody.
And it sounds like you're actually talking about three different activities. So one is the R&D, the researching the patents and figuring out what kind of components you want in a given camera and designing the camera. Two is actually manufacturing the camera. And three is putting together the documentation or the marketing products to let people know.
That's what we're doing today.
How to use the cameras or how to assemble the kits or what have you. So you've done a successful Kickstarter for one of your cameras, right? I mean, is that a good model for covering the R&D aspect?
I don't know if Kickstarter is a good way to monetize only the R&D, right? The last time I ran one, it was pretty successful, but I don't know how you classify it as like a donation and then a thank you gift, whatever, but like ultimately people were buying a physical product, right? And I'm asking for a whole lot more money this time to buy nothing, something we're conditioned now to expect is free. And like, I have no moral like, oh, this is my art. People, you know, should appreciate it to the tune of $75. I am a child of the internet. I grew up expecting things to be free on the internet. I love that, right? I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. I'm standing on the shoulders of telecom engineers and transistor engineers and the dude who's scanning the books at the Library of Congress and putting them on Google or people on forums. And if I had to bet, I'd guess that it's not a good way. I'm going to try it because the downside is that if the project isn't fully funded, nobody will have to pay and I will just go back to selling individual cameras for a lot of money.
You're trying to fund what precisely?
Yeah, so generally, like when I sell a camera, it pays for hours of printer time, which includes materials and electricity, and then it includes assembly time, and then it includes hopefully some premium that pays for however much amount of time I put into designing the initial files and prototyping it. So I went to Spain a couple of months back for almost a month, and I came back and I spent an entire month filling orders, right? And I have at any one point 10 prototypes that are in active development and 40 in a book. And I didn't get any time to work on those things that I'm interested in. I was just making the same camera over and over and over to fill these orders. And I just thought, you know, out of a year, maybe I spend 6 to 8 months of that time spread out over the course of the year filling orders. At least in my mind, the higher value thing that I can do is design these things and print the first 10 of them, make sure they work and make, if not entertaining, but dry and informative instructional video on how one would print, assemble, and calibrate and use the camera. And so if I could figure out a way to just capture the profit for R&D without doing the manufacturing, that would free me up to do a lot of other things. And probably I'll go to some sort of hybrid model of these things if anything should work out.
And that would sort of bring us back to the idea being that if you got paid ahead of time, in a sense, for your design, or knew that you were going to get paid for your design time, your testing time, all of the research that goes into creating this object, if you knew that you could get paid for that time, then you would be happy to give away, in a sense, the results of that.
Yeah, so long as it was a good payout.
Well, we all have to eat. We all have to make rent. But you would be just as happy doing that as actually shipping.
I think I would be more happy doing that, right? Like, it's fun to ship a few cameras every week, but it's like I'm sort of measuring my progress by like how many designs I've put out into the world, which I guess I could also measure by how many of those are actually being used by people. But I think giving out the design files would be interesting. I'm not sure how to skin that cat, but I'm working on it, and a lot of people who are smarter than me are working on it. I think a lot of this comes down to everything used to be manufactured in factories with tooling specific to making one thing, right? You might lay out the floor of a quarter mile long factory to make all of just the gears and the wind mechanism of one Nikon F. And I'd have factories and factories of people making these parts and assembling them. I can't slash don't want to build up to a huge factory making one thing. And I think the market I'm in is way too niche for such a thing. Also, we're sort of past peak film, way past it, and nobody's really making...
Peak film?
Yeah, when film was like used by the most people or the most number of rolls sold, right?
Until it comes back, the vinyl come back.
Yeah, but it'll come back like vinyl, right? It won't come back in your car.
Right, it'll be retro. It'll have retro cachet. Yeah.
I think nobody's making film cameras, right? What it takes to design an Nikon F is, you know, millions if not hundreds of millions of dollars worth of R&D and tooling and manufacturing abilities. But cameras are getting old. They're breaking. It's hard to make and find and scavenge parts for them. You know, it's way less this year than it was 10 years ago and in 10 years or 20 years, right? And so I think, one, it's interesting maybe to put cameras out there that could be repaired, or you could make new parts just by having this file on the cloud if it breaks in 10 years, or you could make a whole new one. And 3D printing technology is only getting better. And so your replacement parts, you wouldn't have to worry, are not as good as originals if they were designed for those sort of strengths and tolerances.
Right.
And I think a 3D printer is medium high tech, but it's, you could buy a totally capable one for $200. I've seen you building your own on the laser cutter downtown. And I think that $200 printer was maybe $3,000-$4,000 or more 10 years ago. You don't need that many tools and that much space and capital investment to build runs of hundreds of thousands of things. You could make a few for, you know, niche communities or a few on your own if you had one of these things. And I think they're becoming more ubiquitous. Yeah, but like getting to that medium scale now, I don't have the economies of scale. When I'm making 200 cameras, it still costs me as much. You know, once I've paid for the R&D to make one camera and 10 cameras, it doesn't get any cheaper.
Right.
Whereas if I was injection molding things, it would get massively cheaper, but, you know, I'd be $2 million in by the time we made the molds.
And committed to having 200,000 cameras in your garage.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Which
I don't want to do that.
What's ironic with the coming ubiquity of things like 3D printers is in some ways it mirrors actually what happened with photographic printing. You know, I came out of the service bureau world at one point as a designer, and you had to go to a service bureau to get digital prints, whether it was to throw on an offset printing press or to get what we now think of as color photographic prints. You could only go to a service bureau, and it was fabulously expensive to get each print. And now, of course, we've all got, not, I shouldn't say we all, but many people have photographic quality inkjet printers in their houses that cost...
I bought one for $25.
Yeah, and you know, you pay
right
for, yeah, you pay for the ink. And I think I'm seeing the same thing slowly start to happen with things like 3D printing. I mean, even just 5 or 8 years ago, the only place to really get your hands on some 3D printing was to go to a makerspace where the people there had invested a lot of time, a lot of money into getting a process that worked on the desktop. And now it's, you can have, you know, a really nice printer shipped for like less than $200. And, you know, you might have to fuss with it a little bit, but it's not terribly difficult to get a decent print out of.
You know, I should mention that this is all sort of standing on the shoulders of open source movements as well, right? Another personal hero of mine is Joseph Prusa, right, who runs a giant manufacturer and makes his
now
money
he
manufacturing,
does, yeah.
But also for years just gave away all of his plans for free, even to businesses who were making knockoffs of his products, which I have some of those, you know?
Yeah.
And somehow made it work extraordinarily well. And I think it's interesting. I don't think bubble jet printers exactly came down in price because people at makerspaces were hacking CD players into bubble jets. But I think 3D printing has been really uniquely driven, like much tech has not, towards cheaper, better things by dudes in their garages.
Yeah, and I think that's just happening more and more. Well, this has been just a great discussion about some issues that are close to my own heart. If you would like to find out more about Ethan Moses and his work, you can visit his website, cameradactyl.com. You have been listening to Augmented Humanity, which is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.